Well, Nick, it has been a season of grinded out results for the Blue Jays offense, no question. But for whatever reason, T-Mobile Park became a hitter's paradise for the Jays. They score 9 runs today, the most runs in a single game so far this year, 21 runs over 3 total games in Seattle, a 9-1 runaway win, not many stressful innings today. The Blue Jays sweep the Mariners, and they do, in fact, somehow come home with a 4-2 record on the road trip after all, which I think when we were doing this last week, we felt that that was kind of the barometer for what constituted a successful road trip. They got it done in the end, a 4-game win streak. The Jays now back to 500. They are 20-20 on the season.
And realistically, if you're going to distribute those wins, you want to win against the good teams that you might be positioning in the playoffs. Losing to the Angels is not a big deal because you will not be competing with them later on. It is an odd result. There's no two ways about it, right? Like the Seattle Mariners went into this series as one of the better teams in baseball, one of the better hitting teams in baseball. The Blue Jays came out, they outscored them 21-7. And, you know, honestly, in the first 34 games of the Blue Jays season, they scored 6 or more runs only 6 times. They've now done it 4 days in a row. Like, this really looks like a different team than the one we were seeing as recently as the middle of last week.
Yeah, pretty impressive results for pretty much everyone involved. And I'm going to include Urania and Lauer in that as well, considering how this game went today. But again, you can text us here on Jays Talk and give us a call as well. Show Ali, Nick Ashbourn with you. We're live for Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network, streaming on sportsnet.ca and the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call as well, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Again, 590-590, name and location is the people's text line. It is always open. We're here until right before puck drop of Leafs-Panthers Game 4. I did want to get to this today, as there is a day off tomorrow for the Blue Jays, Nick, but this game was the Jays' 40th game of the season. They are 20-20, as we said. And of course, 162 divided by 4 is just over 40, 40 and a half. So whether you say it is today or Tuesday, the Jays are more or less at the quarter pole of the season. Now, I will give credit to Brian in Toronto, who texted us his report card, his letter grades of individual players during the pregame. So in honor of, I think, a pretty great idea by Brian, I was hoping I wanted to hear from, certainly from you, but all the listeners as well, letter grades. And I mean, you can interpret it however you want. It can be for the season at large at the quarter mark. It could be for individual guys, as Brian did. I'm sure you guys have letter grades for the manager, the front office, ownership. You guys can interpret it however you want. But again, give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Again, 590-590. Name and location is the text line. I am not soliciting letter grades on myself because I just know they will be lower than Blair's. And it's been a long week. We don't need that. Okay. We don't need that on a Sunday afternoon. So, I guess you could send those if you want, but I just won't read them.
You get to a certain point in your life where you're happy to have escaped being evaluated that way as a human being. And I think both you and I are in that place.
Yeah. I'm at that point where I'll never go back to school ever for the rest of my life. I stand by that. I don't know what lies ahead for me, but that's never going to happen again. I've done a lot of schooling in my life. I don't know about you, but
fair enough.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about today's game, and again, a 9-1 win. It's hard not to talk about the offense first after not only just this game, but again, like you lined up all 4 games of this win streak. They kind of flashed this on the telecast just as the top of the 8th inning began, but at that point, in 4 games, the Jays have collected 46 hits. They had a batting average of .326, an OBP of .391, and scored 7.3 runs a game. Double-digit hits in 5 straight games. That is the first time, according to Chris Black, Blue Jays producer extraordinaire, they have done that since late August, early September of 2023. Like, that is so much far and away the best offensive stretch we saw this team put out all season, and they're putting up numbers we haven't seen in a couple of years. So well done by them to do it against, to your point from earlier, not a bad team, while also holding them down. Again, 7 runs scored by the Mariners in 3 games. I mean, the Blue Jays almost totaled that in essentially almost every game of the series.
And when you looked at the lineup today, there was a pretty good reason to believe that this would be the day where that kind of ground to a halt a little bit, right? Like Anthony Santander still not available. Like that's a premier power threat for your team. Dalton Varsho not playing in this game. You know, Addison Barger, and as talented as he is, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it a little bit more,
for sure,
someone who had not really been that productive over the course of the season, getting moved up to the three hole. You know, you look at 6 through 9 in the lineup today, you know, talk about Lucas, Clement, Straw, Class A. That's a group where you think, oh man, the lineup's just not particularly long in this game. They're going to need it from the guys at the top of the batting order. Lo and behold, it's the exact opposite, right? Like that group of four players went 8 for 15 today with 3 runs and 5 RBI. Like that, you really do not expect. You expect maybe 4 hits. Like those guys will give you a hit each, right, potentially. And instead, they were really driving this offense. It wasn't like Bo had an unbelievable day or Vladdy had an unbelievable day. You know, we know that Barger and Springer both came through with those big home runs, but those rallies, especially at the beginning of the game where they were stringing things together, it was these unheralded guys who were making it work. And you can't count on that in every single outing, but the fact that on this Sunday that they helped that streak going to give the Jays their highest run total of the entire season. Now, a quarter of the way through the season, you'd like to have hit double digits at some point. That's not the greatest thing that they've haven't had anything more than 8 to this point, but still that group of players deserves a lot of credit.
They really do. They really do. I mean, we've talked a lot over the course of the whole season, certainly, and about the bottom of the order, and the bottom of the order has constituted a lot of different people. Some guys who are injured right now when it comes to Jimenez, for example, some guys who are not even on the active roster right now, such as Alan Roden or Will Wagner. But I mean, Miles Straw and Nathan Lucas in particular, I think, like when you talk about letter grades, I mean, there's one here from Tony in Bradford says Miles Straw gets an A+. And it's kind of hard to argue with the Miles Straw result. I mean, it's funny too. We did get to see the first run scored by Class A after the successful sack bunt from Miles Straw. I admit to you, Nick, in the moment, I was like, why are they making Straw with this do the sack bunt given how well he'd been swinging the bat? Obviously, like process wise, it worked out. But I mean, you start this game, to underline your point, with 3 straight 2-out hits in the top of the second inning from their 6, 7, 8 hitters. And again, that is a group that, I mean, not counting Santander because he doesn't hit in that part of the order, but certainly without Jimenez, without the guys who are certainly in the minors right now. But I mean, Miles Kilometer Straw, as I understand people are starting to call him, coming through with the RBI single. He has been above what expectations have been since he got acquired essentially all season, but 2 games in a row, he factors in the end result. The other day, a 2-run single that provides some insurance. The first ribby of the game today, Nathan Lucas, 3 hits for him. I guess technically 2 walks, although 1 walk did come against Leo Rivas in the top of the ninth inning.
Even he wasn't happy to take that walk. Like, yeah. I think he wanted to take some cuts there. But, you know, it pads the stats. He's looking to get paid. You know, makes sense.
Yeah, it all matters. It all matters the same once you go to arbitration, right? So 3 hits for Lucas. An RBI single included there, 2 walks, right? 2 runs scored on the ground. I mean, those two in particular, Straw and Lucas, in a world where they're not going to get a lot of playing time because of Dalton Varsho's return, they've been very impressive.
Absolutely. And, you know, Miles Straw made a fantastic catch in this game as well.
Right.
At a point in the ball game where, and Chris Lou pointed this out on the broadcast, like he really did not have to lay out and potentially sacrifice his body to make that catch. But he did it for his teammate, for his pitcher, Eric Lauer, who also, I'm sure we're going to discuss more, had a fantastic day. And that's what you're paying Miles Straw for. You're paying him to go out there, run down balls in center field, potentially in the corners, depending on who's available, make nice catches. And, you know, to be fair, there's a bit of a hiccup in the first batted ball of the game where something fell in between him and Class A, and that was a bit of a communication error that, as a center fielder, Straw is the guy who's most responsible for. But we know what he can do in the field. We also know what he can do in the bases. Like, he's a legitimate base stealing threat. You can bring him in as a pinch runner late in games. Is he going to hit as well as he's hitting right now? That would be pretty surprising. Like, he's been kind of a league average bat so far for the Blue Jays with some timely hits. It's hard to say that'll keep up, right? Like, he didn't play for most of last season. He was in AAA for the majority of the season. The last 2 seasons before that, he was a well, well below average hitter. But you got to love what you're getting from him right now because he's contributing every facet. He's hitting, he's playing the defense you know he can play. He's got a couple stolen bases and he can contribute on the base paths as well. Like, this is what you want from that extra outfielder. And, you know, he does have a little bit of a bigger contract, and they did bring him in under these odd circumstances where they're trying to get Roky Sasaki, and it's hard to take that away from the player himself, but the player's on the team now. And right now, he is an important contributor in this complementary role.
Yeah, I think many people, including myself, felt he would ultimately be, you know, like emblematic, which is unfortunate for him to wear, but like emblematic of the front office's failure to properly navigate the Roky Sasaki situation. And maybe that was true to a certain extent, but I mean, he has far outpaced my own expectations, and I'm sure. Nick, that is the case for a lot of people. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590-590, name and location. Paul in Kelowna, BC. Nice to see Clement, Lucas, and Barger come through in the sixth inning. Dale in Nova Scotia. The bats are heating up, and not too late this year. Could make for an enjoyable season. Let's see. There's another one I wanted to get to. David in Dartmouth. This three-game sweep is a big deal. It was a full team effort that provided a weekend of exciting baseball. We know it last happened in 1991. Many senior fans remember that year. A good sign, eh? Yeah, I think he means, I remember seeing it flashed on the TV and on social media that the last time the Blue Jays swept a three-game series, because I think they've done it in a four-game series, but a three-game series in Seattle was before they won the World Series. So that's pretty nuts, honestly, all things considered.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm taking that as a sure sign about where this season is going, but it's a nice, interesting piece of trivia. And, you know, it puts them back at 500, and that's, you know, kind of a symbolic number to be at to show that you're no longer a losing ball club, or however you want to conceptualize it. But the other way to think about it is that when you are 500, you're in the mix. And right now, they are one game out of a wild card. And yes, it is very early in the year to be talking about something like that. But you can bury yourself. And to be honest, in the middle of the week, the discussion was, are the Jays going to bury themselves? Because if they had won one game against the Angels, then they'd come and gotten swept by the Mariners, something that felt like a more likely outcome than what we just saw. They would really be thinking like, oh, wow, we are well below 500 here. We are close to falling out of contention. And, you know, it is an 162 game season, and three games might not feel like that much, but that swing is pretty significant in terms of where the ball club sees itself. And there's going to be decisions to be made for the Blue Jays in the middle of this season. And if they fall out of contention before the trade deadline comes, there could be a really serious shakeup. Instead, you see right now they're very much keeping themselves in the mix.
As we continue talking about the offense as well, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, Nick, but this was a lineup that began the day without Dalton Varsho or Anthony Santander. So I was interested in seeing how the team, especially the top of the order, would acquit themselves without two of their power threats against a guy in Bryce Miller who did come into this game with an ERA above four, but is still someone I think who has had pretty good results in terms of stuff, pure stuff, in his relatively young career. And then in the fifth inning, George Springer goes yard, a 93 mile an hour fastball, more or less right down the middle, like a center cut fastball, not very poorly located, not very hardly thrown. Springer did not miss. I mean, he launched that thing and he kind of like admired it out of the box. He kind of pimped it a little bit as he took a couple steps.
He was very confident that it was gone, and he was right to be confident. Right. It was a 416 foot home run. He hasn't hit a ton of them this season, as good as his year has been. So absolutely his prerogative to enjoy that blast.
Yeah, an absolute missile for his fifth Springer dinger. And I mean, you and I spoke about surprises in the pregame and how Springer has been a surprise. I mean, well, you needed more of that kind of surprise without Varsho and Santander in the lineup, and they really got it from Springer in that inning.
Absolutely. And one of the things the Blue Jays team has done relatively well, even at times last season, even in 2023 when it's had a punchless offense, is they've had guys who will get into good counts, put themselves in a position to succeed, and that's a great starting point. But when you get that mistake, you have to capitalize. And that's what Springer did. Like, as you mentioned, that was 100% a mistake pitch. And this team, you know, they get those because everybody gets those. It's really hard to locate pitches that are 90 plus mile an hour, or, you know, curveballs that are breaking, you know, 50 inches on drop, things like that. Like, pitching is a difficult thing, and they will make mistakes. You have to be there to hit those mistakes. And when the Blue Jays haven't been going, they've seen some of these meatballs go by. They've been fouled off behind them. They've been fooled because they're sitting on a different pitch, and they'll get to 3-1. They'll get to 2-1, 2-0, or something like that. And when the moment comes for them, they have not met the moment. And that was just a classic example of George Springer meeting the moment.
We did see in the Angels series, we did see him take advantage of a mistake. I think it was Tyler Anderson was on the mound. It might have been the first game of that three-game series. But it was interesting because in that series, Nick, you saw early in the game, I think it was the top of the first inning, in that game, Santander watched a couple of fastballs kind of float through the zone, and then Tyler Anderson tried to get away with it again to Springer, and he didn't get away with it. And then today, he sent the same thing. Now, again, a few games in between those games where you want to see a little bit more from Springer, but certainly. But I think you are seeing a better, I've used this word a lot, but a better process from Springer specifically this year, because he seems less afraid. And Sportsnet.ca has a story up on this. I think it was Ben Nicholson-Smith who wrote this, but just about, you know, his work with Popkins, the hitting coach, and mentality-wise, where he was last year versus where he is this year, and just seeing Springer maybe not being afraid to get to two strikes and still taking some hacks and going after the pitches he should go after instead of trying to protect or being afraid to get down in the count. So it's nice to see that come around for a Springer, because it does feel like you're seeing, at least so far this season, there's a lot more baseball to be played, but it does feel like you're seeing a more consistent Springer, a guy who is more consistent with the version of himself that was so successful in Houston for so long.
There's a significant difference in his approach this year. Like, he is, as you said, he's willing to get deeper into counts, and that's resulted in more walks and more strikeouts. Like, he's striking out significantly more than he did in past years. But the last couple of years, as he's gotten a little bit older and sometimes a bat slows down, a lot of times guys will find a way to compensate, and they'll be like, you know what, I might not have the swing that I can rely on to hit the home run, so I'm going to be more conservative and hit for more average, and I'm not going to strike out as much. And we saw a bit of that with Springer. That's kind of the, you know, the Miguel Cabrera decline phase type thing, and we've seen that in a few cases. And this year he's sort of taken the opposite approach. He wants to just cut these big swings loose, and he knows that sometimes it's going to result in a swing and miss, but it's going to give him a chance to, you know, hit a ball over the wall, hit a ball into the alley. And his power is just significantly up from last year, whether it's how hard he's literally hitting the ball, some of those stack ass numbers, or just, you know, he's slugging .517 right now after this game. That is a really strong number for a middle of the order power hitter, which is what he's been for a huge percentage of his career. But the last couple of years, he's been hovering more around 400. Like, last year was at 371. That is not George Springer. And this year he looks a lot more like George Springer. There will be moments where those strikeouts maybe pile up a little bit. There'll probably be some slump somewhere along the way, but at least he is looking a little bit more like the guy that the Blue Jays signed for all this money a few years ago.
JJ in Toronto on the text line, 590-590, name and location. And still some time to give us a call before we make way for the Leafs. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. But on the text line, JJ saying, nice to be, he actually sent this in before the game finished. He said, nice to be sending in a confident win text in the eighth. Definitely needed one of these, can breathe a little easier. Baseball is funny, despite being .500. Consistent is just something this team hasn't been. The hots and colds have got us here. Here's hoping we can piece together a little more of the hot from here. Keep it going, boys. JJ in Toronto. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Consistency has been something that has often eluded this team for long stretches, and they have found it here for four games, so here's hoping they can keep it going. Consistency has also been found for Addison Barger, Nick. I mean, in that same inning, we're talking about the Springer home run, right, in the fifth inning. Before that happened, Addison Barger, with a walk in the fifth inning, I mean, he takes a 3-2 pitch to keep that inning going, and Barger, and again, we talked about this in the pregame, he has been someone. And I mean, it's not like he has a particularly long major league career, but he has been someone who has gotten maybe a little antsy sometimes when he's ahead in the count or when he's at two strikes, either or. So for him to show the patience to get that walk and keep the inning going, because again, two outs at that point, and then the next time up, he just punishes a baseball for a solo shot in the seventh inning. I mean, it just feels very fitting that Barger gets a home run almost as the cherry on top after what he did all series long. Like, certainly there are questions about him, to use the word consistency again, long term, but I do think it is undeniable that the idea that the ceiling of what you can get production wise from Barger is higher pretty much right now than anyone else you can stick at third base, like maybe outside of Vladdy if he ever goes to third, which doesn't happen all that often, right? So I love what I'm seeing from Barger, which is a continuation of what we've discussed over the past couple of games. But again, I wanted to make sure that walk in the fifth got as much credit as the home run did, because that walk kept the inning going.
Absolutely. And you can also dial it back to the previous at bat too. Like Vladdy absolutely hammers a single, 117 miles per hour on that single. Like that is a number that the vast majority of human beings simply cannot touch. Really impressive hit. And then Barger, fantastic at bat there, as you point out. He does not get over anxious. He fights his way back after falling behind in the count to secure that walk. And then, of course, the huge home run from Springer. Barger in this game shows you sort of both of the things you want to see from him, right? Like the first thing you want to see from him is an improved approach. Like he, in his first taste of big league action in 2024, he struck out more than you'd like. He didn't necessarily walk as much. You knew that was a risk with him a little bit based on what you've seen in the minors, but it was exaggerated a bit. And it did seem like he was aggressive, maybe too much early in counts, a lot of 0-2, a lot of 1-2, put himself behind the eight ball, not in a good position to succeed necessarily. And so the approach is part one. So he showed that, especially in that at bat. And then what you want to see from him is you want to see him hit the ball really hard and you want to see him hit it over the fence because that is what differentiates him offensively from other players. There are plenty of guys in this organization who can make contact with the ball. Arguably, there's an overabundance of those guys. So what the Blue Jays need is someone who can do some damage, again, kind of as I mentioned before with Springer, when they get that opportunity, who is going to make the opposing pitcher pay? And Barger is absolutely one of those guys. So in this game, you see both sides of it. You see him potentially with that maturing approach, or at least one instance of it, and then you see what he can do when he really gets behind a baseball. And he didn't get too far from hitting a home run off the position player as well, which maybe wouldn't have been that impressive in a sense, but yeah, you know, it's really special what his bat speed and what his strength creates in terms of the ball flying off his bat.
I know batting order is sometimes dependent, not sometimes, in a large part dependent on who the opposing pitcher is and days off for guys and injuries. Like there's a lot that goes into constructing the batting order, but what do you think? Would you keep Barger if you're still managing Santander and Varsho to a lesser extent, probably more Santander given that he took that tumble into the seats a couple of nights ago. So third straight game he did not play, but what do you think? Like, would you keep Barger up there if Varsho and or Snyder, Varsho and or Santander are not going to be in the lineup for a little while longer?
Realistically, yeah, you've committed to the lineup construction, not committed, but I think the lineup construction of Bo, Vladdy, Santander when everyone's healthy is generally where you want to be. Where things could get interesting if Barger continues to produce as he's done the last, you know, kind of 2 weeks or so, would be in the middle of the lineup, you know, but potentially behind George Springer. Like that's a spot that Dalton Varsho has come into. And to be fair, since Varsho's returned from injury, he has displayed a fair amount of power himself. But traditionally speaking, Varsho has been approximately a league average hitter. And if Barger really gets going, he has potential to be more than that. And again, it's easy to say that on a day where he looks fantastic and during a stretch when he's been hitting the ball well. He has not come close to proving that at the big league level. Like right now, Varsho is absolutely the more proven commodity. But there's a world where Varsho fits better kind of seventh in your lineup. And maybe if Barger really gets rolling, he could be that guy who, yeah, hits fifth approximately behind Springer.
I wanted to get to one more guy with you before we go back to the text line here. Because lots of texts I want to read. But Alejandro Kirk. And Kirk, another great day. He rips a double half a foot above the zone, it looked like. I mean, this coming after he stayed in the game after getting hit in the head on a Julio Rodriguez backswing. That same inning, he throws out Cal Raleigh trying to steal second. So Kirk looking good again after going 4-for-5 in the second game of this series. The double, this is courtesy of our friend Thomas Hall. The double was his sixth pulled hit with an exit velo of at least 105 miles an hour, 106.1 miles an hour. I mention it because he only had 8 of those kinds of hits all of last season. He's had 6 already, and it's the beginning of May. So very impressive to see more of the consistent results in terms of hitting a lot of balls like on a line coming this year for the first time versus like a few seasons ago. So here's hoping it keeps up. Here's also hoping that he's okay. He came out of the game in the fifth inning after the backswing hit on the head. He stayed in for a while and then came out shortly. Heineman took over. Concussion issues, I'm sure it's like related. We'll have to see what Schneider says. They're no joke, and you never really know how people are going to respond, sometimes right away or in a couple minutes or even in a couple days. I mean, I don't know if you've been concussed ever, but I have been twice. And my experience was very different both times. And I'm sure both of those experiences were different than like if it were to happen to you or someone else, right? So probably for the best, they were being cautious, I think, with Alejandro Kirk.
it's really hard to speculate because, as you mentioned, and I have had this experience too, like, you can have a concussion that really affects you over the longer term. Yeah. You have a concussion that leaves you relatively quickly. And we haven't even confirmed a diagnosis on him. So there's just, that's a whole separate issue. We'll see what happens, Alejandro Kirk. I think it's safe to say everyone listening is hoping that he's okay. In terms of his performance on the field, like, he has been doing significantly better recently with the bat. He's looking a lot more like the guy that has been, you know, productive hitter. Not necessarily an offensive star, but a good hitter for his position for most of his Blue Jays career. And he's hitting, before this game, he was hitting .391 in his last 11 games. And that, even that double, was a bit emblematic of what we're seeing with Kirk, where he's a little bit more aggressive than he's been in the past. Like, his walk rate is way down this year. And that's, it's arguably overcorrected a little bit. Like, he was into this game, had a 3.3% walk rate. That's about a third of what it was last year. You probably don't want to go quite that far. But there have also been times in his career where he gets a little bit passive and he probably takes too many pitches. So it's something that's, you know, it's a push and pull. It's something that he's working on. But at this particular moment, his ability to get aggressive, sometimes finding pitches outside the zone that, even if they aren't ideal, maybe for some hitters, they work for him. And that's what we saw with that double. He turned on a high fastball that is not easy for guys to hit. But Kirk's always been a guy who handles velocity relatively well. And we saw it on that hit. And he showed us in spring training, like, his batted ball numbers, like, his stack ass stuff, it was pretty good. The contact quality was nice with him. And there was sort of these hints that he might be able to do a little bit more this season than he'd done the previous year. Obviously, he'll have to be healthy and it'll take some time to see if that'll come to pass. But it's intriguing to see what he's doing, because he could be someone who really helps from that, you know, the bottom third of the order, sixth spot, something like that. He can be sort of an average hitter for you, gets on base a decent amount. Not necessarily a star, but someone you're happy when he's at the plate.
I heard from our producer, Nick Blackmore, that Schneider said in the post game that he was removed as a precautionary measure with a head contusion. So they didn't say concussion. They did say head contusion. Now, I guess contusion can mean a lot of different things. It could be like a scrape on the head for all we know, right?
So I guess that makes it even more ambiguous, yes, to be honest.
It does. It does. We'll have to see. I mean, it's an off day tomorrow. Probably won't hear a lot tomorrow, but I think on Tuesday we'll probably hear a little bit more. I think I probably, like, unfairly criticized Kirk last night, and I think I just expressed myself poorly when talking about Kirk's 4-for-5 night last night, because I kind of wanted to say what you were saying, that Kirk, even with a 4-for-5 night, and he's been really, really good this season, I think that it profiles best for him to hit in the lower half of the order instead of hitting, like, fifth, for example, where he has been hitting recently. I think with if Santander was back and with Barger playing the way he's been playing, I got to think that sixth is probably 6-7, like, in that spot, depending on who the opposing pitcher is probably the guy, probably the spot where Kirky would likely hit going forward. But I do also think that, I mean, if you're getting anything close to what you're getting from Kirk offensively so far, and like you said, it's been pretty positive, while also getting a pretty elite defensive catcher, I mean, you will not only ultimately be happy about that contract long term, given that he is, like, the only other player next to Vladdy who's signed into, like, the 2030s, essentially. But I think the truth is, if you're getting that combo on offense and defense, like, there are just very few catchers overall in baseball who can do what he does in both regards while also catching, like, over 110, 115 games, right? Like, who else does that? Like, if your answer to that question is less than 10 people, and I think it probably would be in baseball, then that would essentially make Kirk a top 10 catcher in the sport. And I think that sounds about right to me, the way he's looking right now.
Yeah, I don't think that's a ludicrous statement to put him up there with some of the, you know, he is not a superstar level player. His offense is probably going to kind of hover around league average, which, to be clear, is good for a catcher.
Yeah.
And then as long as robo umps don't take over, his framing is going to be really valuable.
And he was really good with the ABS in the spring,
yeah,
right?
So he has his own role with that, as long as it's not full robo umps. He's generally been good at blocking the plate. And his throwing has really improved. Like, he has become such a complete defensive catcher.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy how far he's come in that regard, to be honest, because when he first came up, people saw him as an offensive threat who was a part-time catcher, part-time DH, and his contribution would be with the bat. And things have changed so much. He's matured so much. He's 26 years old, and he is kind of one of those relatively few long-term pieces the Blue Jays have. It doesn't make him a foundational piece or someone who's going to be at the All-Star game consistently, but he's a type of player that a huge percentage of teams in baseball would love to have.
590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. We have a couple minutes to go, Nick. So let's take that break and on the other side, read all the texts we have not yet gotten to. And let's also check out the Bet365 standings update with a lot of finals across Major League Baseball this Sunday afternoon. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk. That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Shou Ali. We're back in a flash on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
That he's chilled out a little bit, you know. I think that, you know, you kind of get it now with Varsh having the day and Tony, you know, needed probably one more and being good on Tuesday. So if he hadn't been playing the way he had and, you know, conversations that you have with him and just watching him kind of, you know, how he's composed, you feel a little bit shaky about it. But he had a great series, man.
That is John Schneider talking about Addison Barger, who I think a lot of people are quite happy to see some positive results from, Nick, as again, a home run from Barger. He had the walk, as we discussed earlier, and just a great series overall as he continues to show maybe to continues to back up perhaps some of the underlying metrics that he had shown at all levels of baseball over the last couple of years. But a big part of not only a 9-1 win, but a 4-game winning streak to end a road trip 4-2. The Blue Jays 20-20 on the season. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Shou Ali and Nick Ashbourne with you. Before we go back to the text line, Nick, 590-590, name and location. Let's go to the Bet365 standings update. At Bet365, you can bet on popular markets like hits, home runs, and total bases. Download the app and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 19 plus, play responsibly, Ontario only. So, it looks like all but one game, I guess that's Sunday Night Baseball, are done, and all the American League East teams are also done. So let's see. The Brewers did beat the Rays 4-2. The Red Sox beat the Royals 3-1. The Baltimore Orioles beat the Angels 7-3. The Yankees, geez, they crushed the Athletics. I hadn't seen that score. They won 12-2. And then the Blue Jays won 9-1. So a lot of winning actually happening in the American League East. So not a lot of change in terms of games back. But the Yankees are 23-17. The Red Sox are 22-20. The Blue Jays, of course, as I said, 20-20 themselves. The Rays are 18-22. And that'll be the team the Blue Jays play next come Monday at the Rogers Center. And the Orioles, they won. They are 15-24. Let's keep taking everyone's text though, Nick. 590-590, name and location. Drew from Ottawa talking about Barger. This series was Barger's coming out party, highlights everything the front office sees in him. David North Vancouver, the team heard Jules say she needed at least 4-2 on this road trip, so they found a way to pull it together after the disaster start. It's true. I'll give Jules some credit. I point blank asked her on last Sunday, what do the Blue Jays need to do? And she said, I remember she said they need a winning record. So I said, that means 3-3 at least. She said, no, that's unacceptable. They need to go 4-2 on this 6-game road trip. It probably didn't come the way any of us imagined it, Nick, but 4-2 nonetheless coming back home.
It doesn't matter how the wins are distributed as long as they come. Like, yeah. You'd like to pile up wins against teams you might be potentially in competition with for a playoff spot if that's a wild card race. And, you know, the Seattle could be that at some point this season and against teams in your own division. But at the end of the day, people tend to get maybe overly riled up against losses to bad teams and maybe overly excited about wins over great teams. The end of the day, the record is what the record is. And right now the Jays have a 500 record, which is nothing to be unbelievably exuberant about, but something to be at least somewhat satisfied with.
Jeff and Sarnia on the text line saying we were doing the grades earlier. Jeff saying A+ for the signing of Vladdy, that got rid of that distraction. And I think it was probably a distraction at some point, but it's funny, even though Vladdy perhaps didn't factor in a massive way today or yesterday, at the same time, he's going to factor in down the stretch, and you do need him to start slugging a little more. But I definitely agree that getting rid of that distraction deserves a high grade.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was interesting that it took going into the season, which is not what people expected. There was the deadline passed. It was a bit chaotic at the beginning of the year, but the Blue Jays have a player to build their offense around for the long term. And that is an immensely valuable thing for any franchise to have.
Greg from Saskatoon. We just swept the Mariners in Seattle. Am I dreaming? This could be the turning point of our season. Let's go. Shout out to our new Pope Leo, a big baseball fan. That's a free buddy.
Did not expect to get any Pope references today.
I mean, look, the Blue Jays are undefeated in the new reign of Pope Leo the 14th, so that's definitely something.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be impressed if they end up 142-20, but... we'll have to let that go a little bit longer to see if that's a real trend.
Just a complete aside. I don't know if you saw this, but so the new Pope, Pope Leo the 14th, previously, I guess his birth name, Robert Prevost, I believe. And ESPN dug this up. So I guess he's from Chicago, as we know, the first American Pope. ESPN dug this up. I have no idea how they found this, right? It's a shot, a single frame of the crowd from the 2005 World Series. And there he is. He's just in the crowd watching his beloved White Sox. So I don't know how you find that. I don't know if like AI is involved and like face scanning and then scanning the archives at ESPN or what, but that I saw that and I was stunned because I mean, that was 20 years ago. I don't think he was like a cardinal 20 years ago.
I mean, everyone knows that ESPN has the best Vatican journalism department in the world, apparently. And it clearly paid off in that moment.
Apparently they do. But yeah, big baseball. Greg is right. Big baseball fan, loves his White Sox. Let's keep taking people's texts, 590-590, name and location before we get out of here. Jay from Regina, a massive high five to John Schneider and having that plan of pulling Urania after one time through the order and putting in Lauer. It's true, we haven't really talked about them so far, but it was a weird way to start the game for Urania, who ended with two innings pitched, two hits, one run, which was earned. It was the hot shot from Dylan Moore, one walk, nine batters faced, 31 pitches, 19 strikes. So the miscommunication, as you said, with Class A and Straw, and then he does walk Cal Raleigh, but we discussed this in the pregame show. He was favoring the changeup. I mean, he got all of Julio Rodriguez, Randy Arozarena, and Rowdy Tellez to pop up on changeups for outs. So he was still using the changeup quite effectively, and then quickly yanked after the bomb to Dylan Moore. Eric Lauer, 4 2/3, one hit, no runs, one walk, 5 Ks, 14 batters, 63 pitches. It was essentially a full-on start, a great mix of four-seamers, sliders. The curve looked really good. I was very impressed, even though he came in with this game tied, essentially.
Yeah, I think Urania looked like someone who might have had a couple more good innings left in him, to be honest. The changeup was really working. It seemed like the Mariners were a little bit discombobulated. You saw a lot of those pop-ups from them. Eric Lauer, the stuff was just a little bit more impressive. Like he averaged 92.5 on his fastball. That does not sound fantastic, but the last time that he averaged 92 miles per hour or more on his fastball in an outing, October 4th, 2022. So, you know, he turned back the clock a little bit, mixed the pitches well, and I thought that he didn't get a ton of whiffs, but he really painted the corners of the plate.
That does it for us here on Jays Talk. That's the great Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali, and thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Elmwood and Owen Sound. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today at your local Crown Rust Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Nick Ashbourne's mom, Mary Beth, Ben's mom, Sarah, Chris's mom, Marion, my mom, Zarina. We love you and appreciate all that you do for us and that all moms do for everyone out there. We thank you every day, but certainly today. A great way to celebrate Mother's Day, a 9-1 Blue Jays win for Ben, Chris, Nick, Tom. Nick, I'm Sho, and that does it for us to wrap up this series. We are out of here, and that does it for us on what has been a very strange week with the late ball games. Thanks to everyone for putting up with me. Blair and Barker back on Tuesday. We'll talk to you later.